Made my debut, Australia, Perth, green wickets, bat first, batting six.
Oh.
Walk in, we 40 odd for four. Facing Mitchell Johnson.
Yeah.
Bowling 158 k's an hour.
Oh.
You know that because they've got those massive massive boards where they put the speed on and the crowd just go, woo, woo, and you're just like, Christ, what have I signed up for, young man?
Welcome to The Biggest Man in Cricket with your host, David Brooke.
We are here Saturday morning in a beautiful Cape Town, and we've got the legendary, the one and only, the Bulldog, Dean Elgar. Welcome home. You're home for a bit. Well, home in South Africa, but not in, in Pretoria, but you're in Cape Town. Welcome to The Biggest Man in Cricket, mate.
Hello, Brookie. Thanks for having me. Looking forward to this. It's maybe something that we've been speaking about for a while. And yeah, in Cape Town now, in pre-season with Essex.
Yeah.
Who would have thought that would be a reality, but it is now. Thanks for having me.
Mm. Absolute pleasure. What do you mentioned you're here for with Essex. Pre-season tour in South Africa. There's worse places to come.
Very much so. I'm pretty sure it beats Bangladesh. In Cape Town, we're actually supposed to be in Sri Lanka, but that fell through on 99. And coach phoned me up, is like, is there any nice places in Cape Town? South Africa we go to. So I tried to push for Pretoria so I could be closer to home. But in saying that, I'm actually glad we're in Cape Town because a little bit further away from family life for a bit. It's great being in Cape Town. We've been hit with a heat wave, which is throwing a little bit something into our English camps. It's great to be here.
It's some of the boys might be struggling a little bit, but also enjoying a little bit of sunshine in Cape Town's not the worst thing.
Yeah, I think they're mixing the heat and Castle Lights a little bit too much. So I think if you eliminate one of the two, everything will be fine. But the English love coming here. And obviously our guys and our change room don't need much invitation when it comes to coming to Cape Town.
Yeah, the whole preseason, the county game has always been one that I've revered from afar, and I've always followed it. And it does seem that things like even like preseasons get taken a hell of a lot more serious than maybe back home, like from back in the day. Like, just give us something that's a little bit different to what you were used to growing up.
Years ago, South African preseason from a domestic point of view would be very much based still in South Africa. Mm. Unfortunately, the rand doesn't go as far, so you don't have the luxury of going overseas.
Mm.
Whereas the English pound is a lot more attractive and you can get to different parts of the world now. The last 2 years with Essex particularly, we've had two preseasons in Abu Dhabi. And for me, that's obviously been a first.
Mm.
And now they come to Cape Town. So it's totally different when it comes to those kind of things. Also in England, it's horrible weather this time of the year. So they want to get out, and it's been miserable the last few months in the UK with rain and cold and wet. So I don't blame the guys for wanting to leave their shores to come here or go to Abu Dhabi, or some of the teams go to Spain. There's a cricket field in Spain, one would think. Wow. How cricket in Spain, but
yeah.
There's pre-season camps that happen there as well. This is what they have to do, and it's a slightly different to a South African spin of things. Mm. Where South African pre-seasons are very much, you stay in South Africa, you maybe just change the location.
Mm.
Whereas the English county pre-season is very much abroad.
Maybe go to Sun City or something instead of Oudtshoorn.
Yeah, maybe.
Your career, I followed your career throughout. It's kind of coincided. We are similar ages, and it's coincided with me growing up in cricket. And I remember, seeing you first time back in the Free State days, the Eagles days, batting with Riley back in the day. Just like, take us through where you come from, the Free State, Welkom, school days. Take us through that first part of your journey.
Yeah, I'm going to have to think back now, Ricky. I'm a little bit older now.
You've had some coffee now, so...
A little bit older now, so I'm going to go back like 2 decades now for this. Even in saying that, I mean, it's 20, going into my 21st season. Pretty special. You mentioned the Welkom days, and that's, born and bred in a very little, small gold mining town in Welkom. went to a pretty good school, very small school, being in a little platteland place. It kind of isolates yourself from a lot of opportunity, I guess. So if you get opportunities coming your way, you need to grab them very quickly. Otherwise, it's just going to slip away coming from a small town. I don't think I would have changed where I came from, because I think it kind of molds the character that you become one day.
Mm.
So I think that hard work and resilience was always something that I've had to start from a very young age. Even without knowing what's actually happening and how things are going to transform growing up. It's all part of the mold and the character that you become one day. So yeah, Velkom, very small place. Circle City, I think it's 149 circles in Velkom and only two robots, and I don't think they work.
Have they named one of those circles after you yet, or is it still to come?
I'm not sure. I think they forgot where I came from. But anyways, I don't want a circle named after me at all. So if you want to challenge me on how to drive around the circle, I'm the guy to speak to, because I know how to drive around the circle.
Okay, I'm sure you've got some stories there.
And then obviously did my schooling at a small private school called St. Dominic's College. I think we were only 260 kids in the high school. It was formerly known as CBC. Changed into St. Dominic's, did my schooling there for 11 years. I did my first year at another school.
Okay.
And then joined the school when I was in Sub B, which is grade 2.
Yeah.
It was great for me, because I had an awesome cricket coach, Mr. Louis Klopper, still to this day, still chat to him. Wow. He messages me, I reckon before every game that I still play. I'm still very good friends with his sons. Awesome. It was one of those things where in Velkom, you got to be pretty standout to get recognized, in the next big city, and that's obviously Bloemfontein. So from a young age, I think I was like kind of earmarked that maybe there could be a potential here. And yeah, a lot of back and forth travel to Bloem during the weeks to go to the Free State Academy at that time, age group academy. So it was a couple of us from Velkom and obviously the Bloem guys, dominated by obviously Great College and St. Andrews Bloem. So you get exposed to that life as well.
Was it always cricket, or was there other sports as well that you played?
No, I think from a younger age, I did everything. I played, I reckon I drilled every sport but tennis. I played hockey for a day. I scored a hat trick and I thought, this is too easy. I'm going to take something else.
I want harder. Yeah, I want a challenge.
When I hit high school, obviously you got to choose your summer winter sports. Mm. So cricket was obviously naturally my summer sport, and then squash was my winter sport.
Oh, nice.
By far a better squash player than I was a cricketer. I think I committed a lot of time to becoming a professional potentially in squash.
Yeah.
But then someone pointed out to me, there's no cash in squash.
You don't get out of Bloem playing squash.
You're gonna have to be bloody good to make this as a career. So, yeah. But then naturally I picked up some bad knee injuries when I was 16 years old. I got my SA colors in squash, and then I had to give it up because my knees were totally stuffed. And I think that was just, well, they call it a growth spurt.
Yeah.
One would have thought, I'm only 174 centimeters. I went through a thing called ostrich schlatters that you get in your knees.
Yeah.
So, and I've still got them. Yeah. They like bulging bones that grow, I'm not a doctor, but I mean, that's what I was told. And it's a part of a growth spurt that you go through. But that obviously hindered my development as a young aspiring squash player. So I gave up squash at 16 years old, and naturally just focused on cricket. And I think that's where I just totally focused on that.
Mm.
Did I ever want to become a professional cricketer? I guess so. I had the interest, but I didn't have the desire and the hunger, because I had another interest in squash. But
yeah.
Now I was obviously thrown into this arena of cricket, and that's where I really started like practicing and like working your ass off kind of to make something of it. So from a pretty young age, I had that discipline of training, and I reckon if you ask my dad, he would say how much of a pain in the ass I was growing up, because that's what I wanted to do then. So yeah, I committed hard into that and trained my ass off to become a better version cricketer at a schoolboy level, and obviously wanted to dominate schoolboy cricket at that time. And it paid off. And like 3 years later, obviously you got SA under 19 colours, captain there to a World Cup,
sure.
Which is pretty cool from a little shitty place like Valcom. And I say that because there's little dorpies these days that deteriorate. But I mean, growing up there was great. So yeah, it wasn't always just cricket. There were other interests as well. Soccer. Didn't have rugby at school, but I reckon if there was that, I would have drilled it.
Was sporting your family at all? Was it?
Yeah. So my dad did a bit of semi-pro football, soccer. He did that growing up. But again, back in those days, little town, you still got to work at 8-to-5 job. Yeah. So committing to just purely that is hard work. My mom was obviously into the arts and culture kind of vibe, but she's into her dancing and whatever the case is. So I think sport was naturally in that. I had an older brother. I have an older brother. So nothing's happened to him, but he's still around. Have an older brother. His name's Dale. Quite a few years older, but he was also massively into sports, so he did everything under the sun. So I think as a younger brother, you view what he's doing, and with the age gap that we have, it's 6.5 years, so it's quite a lot of time of between us. So he was doing the tennis, squash, athletics, cricket, soccer, so you see that, and you almost want to follow in his footsteps as well. And then obviously he went into the I'm going to go study. I don't really feel like the sport thing.
Did you study at all? Like university?
I've got a degree in life, I think.
The most valuable degree there is.
I must say, I think it helps. But no, I didn't study. I was straight out of high school into my first contract at the Eagles back then.
Yeah.
Gestetner Diamond Eagles. So
Gestetner Diamond Eagles.
Wow, that's a
that must have been like the Boyer era, right? Like those kind of senior guys.
Yeah, Nicky Boyer was the captain of the Eagles back then. And he gave me sound advice, and it's still something that I live up to today. It's the five fella, you fit in or you fuck off.
Nice.
And that's what he said. And I came into a Eagles team of rich pro-tier history as well. So I was exposed to this as a young dude just out of high school, matriculated somehow. I finished my matric the next year in March because I went to a World Cup. So I was like, I'm not doing this schooling thing, but I mean, I somehow did that. And then just naturally got into a professional cricket career. And I mean, freestyle cricket was a great, I reckon from the age of about 13, I was always playing a Free State representative age group cricket. So, I mean, from a commitment point of view, they were great with regards to my development. They obviously saw something that I didn't see at that age. And I guess, as I say, the rest is history, but it's been quite a journey. I won't lie. I didn't have the luxury of rich parents and didn't have the luxury of going to a big esteemed named school where you automatically are the flavor of the week, you know. So I really had to grovel and work my ass off, and I'm pretty sure if you give my dad a call now, he'll vouch for that. So I mean, but that's my background story. It's not something that I'm ashamed of. It's the character builds you as that character.
100%.
And I think that's where the whole tenaciousness and doggedness, ruthlessness kind of ties in with the way I played my cricket.
It's funny you mentioned all those words and stuff because, you know, when I'm looking at, you know, when I do my research and my preparation for these podcasts, every time a headline, if I just type in Dean Elgar, you know, the Google suggestions will come in Dean Elgar, battler, fighter, tenacious. I mean, that's literally the kind of words that have been defined your career. But knowing you're a little bit off the field as well, that's, you aren't necessarily like that off the field all the time. You are a very kind of good guy, chill guy and stuff. Like,
oh, thanks.
Do you find that like there's this switch that goes on when you get onto that field that you not have to play a certain persona because but that naturally just happens the minute you walk over those boundary ropes?
Definitely. I think if you like that in day-to-day life, I mean, it's you're just letting yourself down if you continue having those characteristics off the field, because off the field, it's not a job, it's life. the minute you cross that rope, that's work.
Yeah.
And that's your career. I've only been given one shot at this. Mm. So you got to find ways of giving yourself the best opportunity to be better than the guy next to you. It's definitely not the way I am off the field. I'm extremely down to earth, I'd like to think. I think I'm misunderstood because of what you see on TV.
Yeah.
And what you read in the papers.
Yeah.
With a black eye because I got drilled with a ball or something like that. But that's not the character that I'm off the field. Mm. But on the field, I had to find a way. I'm not the biggest guy either. So you got to find a way to, like, look at that dude who's 2 meters and say, like, we had a dance, boy. I'm not just going to, you have to roll over and you're gonna get me out of things or something. You're going to work your ass off to get that.
Yeah.
So I had to also find a way in that. And I guess they call it the small man syndrome. call it whatever you want, but I had to find a way to show those guys that I have a presence as well.
Yeah.
I'm shorter than you, I'm smaller than you, but fuck. You're going to work your ass off to get me out.
Yeah.
But again, I think that's the makeup. That's the character. It's your upbringing. It's everything that you go through in your early stages of growing up as a primary school kid into your teenage years. I think all of that has a role to play in that kind of makeup. And I mean, I didn't feel like it was put on. It was always something that was within.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd like to think I'm not an overly aggressive dude.
Yeah.
Definitely not off the field, but on the field, like, I'm coming for you.
At what point in, because you started your career as a middle order batter, you didn't automatically open. At what point was there a point where you were playing a game one day and it was one innings or it was one knock or one match that you realized, I belong? There was no, like, I can't play with the big boys here. Like, was there a moment when that clicked for you?
So it was in my, was it my first or second year at the Eagles? I was, as things happen, you're the younger player, you bat 6, 7, 8 in your professional side, only because there's big dogs ahead of you, and fully respect that.
Yeah.
And naturally, I was like a number 3, 4 batter. So, you know, you fit in.
Yeah.
Like Nicky Boyer told me, Fafo, that's how it is. And I can't remember how many games it was into my career, but Ryan Bailey was supposed to open the batting against the Titans. And it was a Wednesday morning. We were fielding. We're playing the Titans in Bloom. We were busy doing our fielding practice. And there was obviously a fallout between him and Corey Funsale, who was our head coach at the time. And I was just casually walking past them. And I had a pretty good start to my career already. I got 90-odd not out and debut against the Cobras. Didn't play the second game. Was 12th man in Durban. Happy to do it. I'm with the Eagles. I mean, this is the greatest place to learn now.
Yeah.
So it could have been like third, fourth kind of game in my career. We're playing the Titans in Bloom, 4-day game.
Mm.
Bit of a commotion in the field. One's not happy to open the bat in, etc. Titans have got quite a potent bowling lineup.
Mm.
And I was just walking past them, and Corey's obviously done with the conversation, and he said to me, hey, I'll go. Have you ever opened the bat in? I said, no. He says, you are tomorrow.
Wow.
It's like, okay, shit. Never opened my life before.
Yeah.
Start the game, 225 later.
You did okay?
Kind of shot myself in the foot because I don't think I'm going to do it for another 20 years. but that's how it started. And I mean, it's not natural.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess if I was, if I pushed back on that, I would never have had a career.
Mm.
It was opportunity.
Mm.
I've always had a goal or a vision of when I was younger, I wanted to outplay the national players.
Nice.
I wanted to not keep them out of the team, but I wanted to put pressure on them to, like, make them realize, like, I'm not just here to bat 6, 7, or 8 and bowl a few spinners and stand short leg and belt it with a ball. I want to be taken seriously. That's how it came about. I mean, it just happened. Asked the question, said the wrong answer, and then I started opening the batting.
Thanks, Corey. And Bells.
and did extremely well in that first innings. Yeah. And I guess the rest is history, and still doing it for my sins.
You've done it pretty well. I mean, I looked at your stats, and we're not a stats podcast, but I mean, like 18,000 first class runs, 469 innings. That's that's like a year and a half at the crease. You do know that, right? Your dodgy knees have lasted okay.
Well, then there's reason why my back is sore, my hips are sore, my knees are still sore. I can't say I'm very much into the stat thing either.
Yeah.
For me, the wealth of having stats in that will look after itself.
Yeah.
You got to look after the game, the process. Can't be looking so far ahead. I've got a very old school mentality when it comes to that. I would love for the younger guys to have a bit more of that mentality.
Mm.
But I mean, the nature of the game is fast forwarded so much now that they don't really have that opportunity now to have a long first class career, for instance.
Yeah.
It's again, I guess when I give this game up totally, and it might be sooner than I think, I look back at those numbers and I'll be like, shit, okay, it's been pretty good, eh? It's I guess as a young kid, you never dream of this shit. You never think you're gonna play for your country for 12 years.
Mm.
I mean, again, I'll look back at it, small little town boy, from a Plattland place.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Take us to that international debut.
I've had two international debuts.
The test
don't forget about the white ball ones.
The white ball ones. We're going to talk about your white ball cricket. Don't worry, but your test match one wasn't that memorable.
It was very memorable. Yeah. Trust me, I was fucking couldn't stop thinking about it.
But you got a pair that you started off your career with a pair, and it was quite ironic when I was looking at the prep and stuff and. Your pair there, you've got twins now. There's something there's something quite symbiotic about that, but we'll get into the family life a bit later. But firstly, how did you find out about your debut, and who did you replace at the time? Can you remember that?
Yeah, so I'll go to the replacements, and we're still great friends to today. I mean, I had breakfast with him last week in Jacques Rudolph.
Oh, nice.
Jacques was, when I started my career in Bloom, he was playing for the Eagles.
Yeah.
And, very similar kind of batting ways.
Mm.
Our mentality, very similar. Hardworking, dedicated, you know, all those cliches of what the makeup of a professional batter should look like.
Yeah.
And Jacques was the one dude that I moved to immediately, almost like took me under his wing. And I didn't know I'm going to replace him in the test side.
It often happens that when you replace your mate and it's a difficult one.
So. And that only like hit me later down the line that, geez, I actually replaced the dude that I used to look up to.
Yeah.
And the guy that actually helped me and facilitated so many like processes and ways of looking out for me as a young batter.
Yeah.
So it only dawned on me later that, oh shit, actually, did I? In Jock's international career,
that's the nature of the game. Right?
But it's nature of the game. But I mean, it is what it is. It's not like I went out there and said, "I want to take his life.
Yeah.
I deserve to play." It was by no means that. I was just happy to be on a test tour with the Proteas. Wasn't supposed to be on that tour.
Really?
JP snapped his Achilles.
Oh yeah.
And then I got called up to replace him in the side. So, and I didn't. I got to. We were in Adelaide, didn't play that test.
Mm.
Happy to come on test tour of the Proteas.
Yeah.
In Australia,
you don't get
better than this.
Yeah.
This is like honeymoon shit for me.
Yeah.
And then we went into Perth test. Didn't think I was going to play.
Mm.
You can kind of gauge where you're going to bat in that day.
Yeah, I looked at the practice. Lineup. There's some
immensely... great legends of South African and world cricket just on that list. And I mean, if you're down to bat at 8 in a practice, and you're more times not going to jaw. But then Gary came to me and said, listen, you're playing this test.
Mm.
You make your debut. I was like, Park. Okay.
Yeah.
And up until then, I had 6 years of domestic cricket, 6 years of South African A cricket, kind of been the dominant, most dominant batter in the country.
Couldn't have had better preparation.
I'd say it was probably up there with the 6 years of perfect kind of practice. Made my debut, Australia, Perth, green wicket, bat first, batting six.
Oh.
Walk in, we 40-odd for four.
Yeah.
Facing Mitchell Johnson.
Yeah.
Bowling 158 k's an hour.
Yeah.
You know that because they've got those massive massive boards where they put the speed on and the crowd just go, woo, woo, and you're just like, Christ, what have I signed up for, young man? And
not quite domestic cricket.
No, your closest that you had was like maybe facing a Mundi Zumdeki, and he was pretty sharp.
Yeah.
And but not 158 k's an hour on a green wicket. Sold out whacker.
Yeah.
Balls pinging around your ears.
Yeah.
I was like, shit, I'm out of my depth here. Eh? got to duck the first innings. Went down to seven. I wasn't six, I went down to seven.
Immediately demoted, yeah.
Came in, starts bowling, Johnson's bowling again. And I was just like, okay, now there's no respite here for me, is there? And I was batting with AB at the time.
Yeah.
Plumbest LB in the fucking world. And Ailey said, no, I think you should review it. Anyways, it was shattering middle stump.
Hitting the middle of middle.
Shattering middle stump. Got a pair on debut, haven't contributed anything. Felt extremely out of my comfort zone and way out of my depth. Beat Australia in 4 days. Won a test series that very day. I took a absolute screamer on the boundary to get rid of Ed Cohen. But I mean, Australia needed like 450 in their second innings to win. The chances that they were going to get that is next to nothing.
Yeah.
But yeah, they got off to a flyer with Warner and Cohen. And then I took this catch on the boundary and it like kind of started the collapse.
Yeah.
We got 10 wickets in the session.
Crazy.
But yeah, I was there to experience a test series in a test series win in Australia. And what? I would 100% go through that again.
Mm.
I'd go through another pair. I would go through everything that happened, but I experienced the win. I experienced the series win.
Mm.
So then it's not about me.
Yeah.
I mean, you can lie down in your bed and cry and sulk if you want, but that's not going to change anything.
Yeah.
But then you're forgetting about the bigger picture, and the bigger picture is the series win.
I mean, something must energize inside of you. I mean, from the outside, we love, obviously, anytime we beat Australia. But from inside that camp, beating Australia in Australia must be one of those moments that just, like, you don't give a shit what you score. Like, where obviously, you're disappointed. But that must... what is the change room like afterwards? You know, you've got the senior guys there. What goes on in the change room afterwards?
It was just, so afterwards we obviously shook hands, got into the change room.
Yeah.
And now you're watching your idols.
Yeah.
You see how much it means to them. So I just like quietly sat down and I was taking this all in. I think Vernon was sitting next to me in the change room and Robbie P.
Mm.
And I was just sat there and I was like, fucking hell, if this is what it's about, then I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm signing up for this show.
Yeah.
I want to feel what these guys are feeling. I mean, these are obviously legends of South African cricket, world cricket.
Mm.
In Jock, in AB, in Graham, Dale, Mornay. I mean, the list is endless.
Yeah.
A young Vernon, like Faf, young Faf.
Yeah.
So if this is how they're feeling, I want to sign up for this. And I took a lot of positives out of that. I knew I had to up my game. You can't just be a domestic player dominating and coming in and think you're gonna run international cricket. No, you need to up your game. Yeah. So I took that positive out of it. I could have gone into a hole of sulking and depression, I guess, but I didn't choose that. I chose the way of becoming better.
And then you obviously were Titans player at that time. They'd taken you from the Knights at the time, and you've always been a Titans player. Do you think, I mean, that Titans era was, we spoke to Fudgy about it at the time, how much he loved playing for the Titans or go to war for the Titans. Did you feel that that mentality, that professionalism in that side helped you? Because you were one of the players that, and thank you for always coming back to domestic cricket and clapping Western Province when you came back.
But some of my great pleasures.
Exactly. Fudgy the same. But you were always, you always did come back to domestic cricket. You seem to really enjoy just playing. You never were an ego kind of guy where I'm a protein player, I need to take off this week. Yeah, it was important to you.
It's, for me, playing domestic cricket and giving back to younger guys is it wasn't maybe something that I consciously thought of, but I think later down the line it's like almost that's your giving back to those guys, and I think it's extremely important. Where I feel players now don't really give a shit about that; they care about them, they care about the dollars that they're earning. Back then we didn't have that luxury. You had your international cricket was your peak.
Yeah.
That's where you maxed out. You couldn't go any further than that. There weren't big domestic competitions. So I felt like you need to go back and still play. Don't forget where you kind of come from. Domestic cricket got you into this position. You need to somehow go back and play. The Titans team, so obviously I left the Knights to become a better cricketer. And I thought, obviously, Jacques Fall and Rob Walter were CEO and coach at the Titans at the time. And Jacques had been on my case to come to the Titans for a while. And I said, I've already signed my contract at the Knights. I'm committed here for another year, but next year I'll come to the Titans.
Yeah.
I was contracted at Cricket South Africa.
Yeah.
At
and you can time. Choose your,
you can choose your, you can choose your team. So I'd already nominated the Knights. And then just after that, he's like, you come in. I was like, sorry, I'm committed to them. I'm going to be loyal to them for a year. I'll give them a year so that they can find someone else to replace me. But then I'll come after that. So my decision to go to the Titans was one of becoming a better cricketer. I think I could have just stayed in Bloem and meandered on and kept an international career, but it wouldn't have been as long as 12 years.
Yeah.
So for me, it was about exposing myself again to a higher standard. Just something different. Kind of like throw yourself,
getting out your comfort zone, basically.
Throw yourself totally out of the comfort zone. Put your name in the hat with the best players in the country, domestic players. So at the time there was like the Heiner Kunz and the young Aiden and the young Klaas, and Fudgy was obviously there. Jock was also in and around, like he was on his way out. So Abe de Villiers is there, Fuff is there. They're not always playing, but you know they're in the change room.
Yeah.
So if they're not playing for South Africa, they could potentially be in this change room. So your learning and of things to become better is very much within the four walls that you sit in.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was just about exposing myself to a different lifestyle. Like Bloem's obviously a small city, and it's quieter and it's not a lot of traffic. Like you shut yourself and there's like a 10-minute delay in Bloem. So now you're living in Pretoria. It's a totally different thing. You've got to grow up very quickly. Now you're in a proper city, and it's big, and it's hustle and bustle, and it's fucking traffic jams, and it's this, and it's that, and it's, you're exposed to a different way of life. Even walking around in the shops, like there's way more people, and you've got to almost become a little bit more street smart.
Yeah,
just from
adulting a bit more.
You've got to adult again, but I've been an adult already for how many years? Six years, 7 years. I've been out of the house already, so it was almost like another little wake up call, out of the comfort zone, not just from a cricketing point of view, but also just from a life point of view. Exposing yourself to more dangers. And I put that in inverted commas. It's not like there's dangers out there, but I mean, I'm talking about dangers of just the exposure of being in walking around in big city life and traffic jams and all the shit. How do you adapt to that? You're not exposed to that in Bloem. In Pretoria, you're exposed to it. I live 38 Ks from Centurion, where you got to drive every day. 38 Ks, it's either 20 minutes or it's an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Depends on, so. Now you got to figure things out of what time must you wake up? Do you sleep in, or do you really want to push the boundaries of maybe being late? And that's one of my pet hates, is being late. I've only ever been late for cricket twice.
Really?
It eats me up.
Yeah.
So like, just like stupid shit like that, which I think has another impact on your actual mindset of growing up.
being in international cricket, obviously, like, a lot of things get done for you. But you can either choose to kind of just take things in your stride and everything's done for you, or you can actually choose to do things and still do your own washing or be responsible for your own bags or something like that. Were you, like, did you enjoy that taking responsibility?
I think you let yourself down if you just adopt the soft life, because that soft life comes to an end very quickly.
Yeah.
Something could happen, you have an injury.
Yeah.
Career changing injury, boom, just like that.
Yeah.
That all goes away, and what are you left with? Your life skills are totally
up
in the air, and you got to figure things out. So I've always been one of, like, knuckle down. I was also exposed to county cricket as well.
Yeah.
Where,
because you've had two stints in county cricket. You had one a little bit earlier, years ago, before this one.
Yeah, I had three sessions at Somerset, three at Surrey. So I was already exposed to six county stints.
Yeah.
And in the UK, you got to do your own washing.
Yeah.
Like, there's no domestic lady that we're fortunate to have in South Africa.
Yeah.
Like, there's none of that. So even from that point of view, shit, there's no sun.
Mm.
How's your clobber going to dry out? Like, I need it tomorrow. We're playing a bloody 4-day game or one day game or whatever, and my clothes are wet.
Yeah.
How are you going to, like, fix that?
Yeah.
You got to get bloody by a drying rack, for instance.
Yeah.
I mean, this is, you're just exposed to a different way of life over there.
Yeah.
So I've been exposed to all that, and, like, looking after yourself. And yes, when you're in international, when you're under that international like umbrella, you do get treated well.
Yeah.
You do have a cushy life.
Mm.
You can choose to, like, continue having that if you really want.
Yeah.
But it's only for a short period of time.
Yeah. The cushy life, sitting down at number six, that ended when we were looking for a replacement for Graham, for Biff, up at the top of the order. What happened there? In terms of, did a coach come to you and say, listen, it's time now, we're looking for somebody with a bit of grit and determination? Because we went through a couple of combos after Graham.
Yeah.
Take us through that process of you moving up to
so open. Yeah, I was up and down the order. I was 6-7, then I'd play bat 3 when Hash didn't play for the birth of his child.
Mm.
Then I'd bat 3, then I'd open, Alvira Peterson sick, then I'd be opening against Australia in PE.
Yeah.
So and did well in those positions. So I think that was always destined to happen, that I was actually so pissed off when Graham retired. Like, as a kid, watched the dude on TV.
Yeah.
All I wanted to do was open the batting with him. I did it once.
Yeah.
Dickhead went, it got smashed on the shin, first over, Ryan Harris out. And I was like, no, man, it can't be like that. And you're joking. It was still a review system.
Yeah.
And he came
and you
to
like
me,
saying to him, review.
I just turned around. I was like, no, man, he's so out. But I think it was always destined to happen, that I'll naturally take over his position.
Yeah.
Yeah, he retired against Australia. Our next series was against Sri Lanka in Sri Lanka.
Mm.
Kind of, again, doesn't help when you score 100 in goal on a spinning wicket.
Yeah.
I think you kind of cement yourself there for a while.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's the opportunity, eh? I took it with both hands, I think. Ran with it for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And I think it turned out quite okay.
The stats are there, but just take us through some of your most memorable. You obviously got your 199, but you're like, maybe there's an innings that's not as many runs, but very memorable as well.
I would say it's not even 100. It was a 96 not out at Wanderers.
Yeah.
Against India, we were 1-0 down on a dodgy wicket.
Yeah.
A Wanderers absolute nipper.
Yeah.
We needed 200 and, what was it, 280 or 260 in the second innings to win. 1-0 down in the series. Pretty good bowling, India attack.
Mm.
Pretty sharp. Last day, overcast, rainy.
Mm.
Got 96 not out, won the game for the team. For me, that's beats any 100, any test 100.
Mm.
It's like getting your team over the line. And also, I was captain of the team at the time. And this is your job.
Yeah.
You need to knuckle this down. This must probably never be spoken about, this innings.
Mm.
Never. There's must probably better things to talk about, hundreds against Australia or India or England or New Zealand or shit like that. But I think that for me was like such a good thing for the change room.
Yeah.
Like, the change room can take me seriously now as a leader.
Did you feel you needed to have that kind of knock to prove yourself, or did you feel that it just cemented your legacy?
No, I think from a leadership point of view, yes, you have the change room. You got the respect of your teammates as a teammate, maybe not as a captain or that capacity. Yeah. So doing that was quite influential, I felt. It was a lot bigger than just going out and winning a game. It was like really just changing the whole makeup of the change room and what was going on behind the scenes with Cricket South Africa. Yeah. So I think it just kind of just cemented and isolated and all brought us so much closer from that. And then in saying that, we beat India 2-1.
Still haven't
beaten us in South Africa, so eat that.
you did seem to enjoy playing against India. There was something about a Kohli, a fired up Kohli, or like that. It seemed to get your juices flowing. Is that fair to say? Why?
I think particularly him. I think we're very similar characters.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I mean, when you have two guys going at it like that, it's gonna get something. Something's gonna get fired up if you don't get excited and fired up to compete and kind of beat the best in the world at that time, which I'm pretty sure he was as a batter. I mean, geez, why are you playing? Why are you playing the game then? I just think similar characters, so competitive. Both of us want to win so badly.
Yeah.
But if it doesn't go your way, you still take your cap off and you say, well played.
Off the field, you guys good?
Yeah. No, we actually got along after a couple of years. But no, it's one of my favorite characters to play against is him. And I think off the field, he's such an isolated character in India. Mm. He can't do anything.
Yeah.
You got to look at the background story there as well. He's also doesn't come from a immensely wealthy family, so he also had to grovel his ass off and get where he is.
Mm.
So I think very similar kind of stories. Mm. I mean, not the same. Everything's a little bit different, but very similar in the makeup and character-wise.
I've always wondered about the Indian guys, like the Australian guys. You know, you're always tough competitors on the field, but they'll always come to the change room afterwards, have a beer. Do the Indian guys do that as well?
Not necessarily have a beer, but they'll come in and have a chat.
Is it? Okay? Yeah,
they would. We played in India, we played a series that we obviously lost.
Yeah.
It's not a lot of series as you win in India on those wickets that you play on. And we went into their change room, had a chat. I think our guys just want to go into their change room to see if they can get a bat or two. So
it's a different kind of wood and
It's like ivory in those bats or something like that, because they're different breeds. We chat to them, and sometimes years ago, if we're playing in like Joburg, we would stay in similar, we'd stay just across the road, but there's a walkway, and they would come to our hotel, sit around the bar, and I guess I'll have like a chai, and that we'll be around them, have a combo with them.
We mentioned your white ball.
Now we're talking the real stuff, enough Red Bull chat.
But I always felt that and a couple of the guests who've been on the show, even Fudgy, the opposite way, like his Red Bull stats were excellent.
Very good,
He was playing in an era where buggers like you were keeping him out of the side. But your white ball stats are really good. And you seem to enjoy it, especially 50 over cricket.
Not anymore, I'm retired, 9 hours
in the field.
Done with that.
Just take us, you like white ball cricket, obviously. You get pigeonholed. How do you get out of that?
I don't think you do get out of that. I remember growing up naturally, that's all I was exposed to, is the shorter format. We didn't play 2-day games like the schoolboys do now.
Yeah.
So that's all I grew up with. I grew up playing 34 over cricket, 40 over cricket, 50 over cricket. So naturally, that was always there. Mm. At school, I was doing ramp shots and stuff, and now Butler gets credit for that.
Yeah.
I was doing it before him. And I was doing that stuff at school. So it was always part of my DNA as a cricketer, is white ball cricket. If you go look of play of the year, things that I've won, either being domestic teams or domestic national, I've never won a four-day player of the year.
Really? Yeah?
I've got more white ball players of the year than red ball.
Did you tell the selectors this?
I would like to think that they educated
looked at the
on
stats. Yeah.
But so I've always had that. Yeah. I actually had to develop a four-day game.
Mm.
But remember back then, I maybe played a certain way, and the coach was like, can't be playing that shot.
Yeah.
Can't be playing a sweep or reverse sweep. Can't do that. Because it was like old school. And I mean, that's like now, that's what they do now. And I'm playing the block shots for it.
Yeah.
So yeah, again, it was always there because that's what I grew up playing. I love playing it. Love playing T20 cricket. I think it's good for my game, even still now today. Sure. It's so good for that because I get exposed to these younger guys and see what they can do. And you realize like, I can also do that. It's maybe going to take a little bit longer because they've been doing it for more recent, whereas I haven't been doing it more recent, but you can do it.
Yeah.
By practicing, you're able to do it. You're playing the game already at a level, so you just need to change your mindset or something like that. So, yeah, white ball has always been something that I've enjoyed. I still enjoy it now. I play T20 now for Essex.
Yeah.
For some of the guys there that don't know. Striking at 140 something.
The 100 auction's just taking place, sorry, man.
Yeah. Someone out there.
Yeah.
No, I dig it, man. It's nice, and I think it makes you still feel a younger.
Yeah.
It's like you still got more in you to go. I could be boring and just go play four-day cricket, and I reckon I'd hate it.
Mm.
It must probably push me more to giving up than actually wanting to continue. So I actually think the last 2 years of me being exposed to the T20 game again has definitely rejuvenated my mental side of still playing.
Yeah. I think that if we look at, you know, when your international career came to an end, it felt like almost like the end of that gritty cricketer that in international cricket is not going to exist any longer or in a different format. Like, because it feels that old school kind of dogged, don't give your wicket away, do anything you can to just play a dirty 80 if you need to. That seems to have gone out the game. Is that a fair comment?
I think you've hit the nail on the head there. If you look at guys now, there's maybe two batters in South Africa, I reckon, that's actually willing to do that.
Mm.
It's Aiden and Themba, and they've come from a background though.
Yeah.
It's not, they haven't just started playing. They've been playing for a couple of years now.
Yeah.
So they also have that old school way in them, where a lot of the youngsters now, they just want to get the cash. Eh? I don't know if the passion and the drive is still to play test cricket.
Mm.
Ultimately, if you're playing professionally, that should be your dream, is to play test cricket. Because that's where you, for me, that's what you get gauged on.
Mm.
I don't care if you can hit 140 meter six.
Mm.
I don't give a shit about that. Can you bat for 2 days?
Mm.
That, for me, is a standout quality in a cricketer. Can you win a test match single-handedly with a ball? Can you have that spelling where you get 4 for nothing and just turn a test match on its ass like that?
Mm.
That for me is my gauge
of
what kind of cricketer you are.
Mm.
Don't care if you can hit a ramp shot through your ass. I don't care about that.
Mm.
What do you have in the tank?
Mm.
Like, and it's hot in India. Are you going to take the ball and now go run through those batters?
Yeah.
That's what I gauge you on.
Mm.
Are you going to go and block out a test to get a draw?
Yeah.
Knowing that you've got another test in a week's time that you can win.
Yeah.
And then it just changes everything. For me, that's how a legacy is created for individual players. I'm a little bit worried about the mentality of how to go about playing test cricket these days. I don't think it's not just a South African thing, it's a worldwide thing. The game's fast-forwarded, like I said earlier. T20 cricket's obviously come in and dominated. It's dominated the game. It's dominated players' mentalities.
Mm.
Their mindsets are obviously purely about getting franchise gigs now. I've just got that old way of thinking, and I think you also share that similar mindset about the game. A little bit worried about what test cricket will look like in a year's time.
You were there as part of that test side in the cycle that we obviously won the test championship, and you finished your career, but you were actually part of that first part of the test cycle. When you decided that it's time, and you then saw the Proteas go on to win, there must have still been a massive sense of pride when you saw that team lift the trophy.
No, it was, I reckon, the only thing that was lacking there, I wasn't in the photo.
Mm.
And I should have been. Things didn't work out, let's just put it that way. But I played a massive role in us getting there.
Yeah.
I think if I didn't score that 180 in Centurion, we wouldn't have made that final.
100%.
And
that must have been special. I wanted to actually ask you about that. I mean, it wasn't the final test, it was the penultimate one, but scoring that big gun, and it wasn't like you didn't score just 101, 110 kind of thing. You scored big. Was that something that was very much like if you went out for 101, you'd be disappointed almost, like you wanted to go big?
Yeah, it's I always want to go big. So like scoring 110 for me is like, you've done such, just go for another two more hours and you can have 160, 170, 200. Who knows? Yeah, so I've always had that mentality of going out and scoring big hundreds. I think that's a young schoolboy to that be that dominant factor. So I think that's just an old trait. In that game, for me, it was more than just playing a game of cricket. I've never got 100 at SuperSport Parks, my home ground.
Oh.
My last test in Pretoria. My family was all there. My brother and them flew in from the UK to come visit.
Amazing.
Another day, I wouldn't have played that game because it would have been at a different venue. But the fixtures changed, and I said, "No, I want these last two tests."
Yeah.
My family was there. Overnight, I had a massive motivational factor that happened. My phone was going. I got home. I was on, 140 overnight. I can't remember. Long back, I'm old now. Forgetful. So I was overnight sitting at home with my missus having a chow. My phone was going, and Mark Boucher. Okay. Obviously they're having a bit of a braai somewhere, I guess. And he's like him and Jock Callis as well. And there was probably the one guy that I've actually got the best relationship with now off the field is with Mark. Don't always speak to him, but when we do, we just click.
Yeah.
Like a older brother kind of vibe.
Similar kind of way of thinking about the game.
Yeah. And he's like, "Did you get the message? Did you get the message?" I'm like, "Bud, what are you fucking on about here?" And he's like, "Did you get the message from Johan?" I'm like, "What are you even talking about?" So he's like, check your phone. So I checked, like, you know what, when you do well, everyone wants to be your China. When you shit, no messages, flight mode's on. It's like nothing, you're dead to the world, you know. But when it's going well, then
just everyone, your agent, keep your chin up.
Keep scoring runs, buddy. So I checked, there was a number on my phone. I obviously didn't save it, and it opened it, and it was Jean Rupert. And he said, "Remember what Jacques Callis did in 2000 against India?
Yeah,
with a golf swing.
Yeah,
he's like, you do that, and you'll have Leopard Creek Honorary Life membership."
Wow. Okay.
So I'm like, Jesus, what?
No pressure.
They phoned me again. They obviously. Boys are on another level, and they're like, "Don't fuck it up, boy, gang, don't fuck it up."
But you had to win the game for us.
No, I just said said to get a double, and then and do the swing,
yeah.
Do the swing, and then like boom. And obviously, golf's a massive passion of mine. I love golf. Not playing it as much now because busy at home. But anyways, that's another thing. Long story short, started again. Went out 185, got out. Obviously a bit disappointed because the carrot was there. But then...
So you didn't get membership? I mean, you didn't
no,
even...
No. So obviously I took over the captaincy as well in that test, Temba Toy's hamstring, and then I took over that. And in that same day, we bowled India out.
Yeah.
Obviously having a massive KL in the change room, as one does when you win test. Yeah. Drinking our waters.
Yeah. Centurions.
And my phone rang, and it was Rupert, and he just said to me, "Welcome to Leopard Creek."
Wow.
And I was like, "What?" I was like, "Sorry, I failed the mission. Kind of let you down." He's like, "No, welcome." Put the phone down. About to phone me, video call. all the guys whose life members were sitting around one table.
Wow.
And they all voted me in as a member.
Jeez,
so that for me was also another like surreal kind of, talk shit.
Yeah.
Like this never happens for you. And it's basically Mr. Rupert's way of saying thank you for what you've done, which is quite cool.
That's amazing. And I mean, I feel that you are one of those cricketers that it's not about the stats. You are the kind of cricketer that will only appreciate in South Africa after you finish playing. And it's more of the fact that I always believe some of the biggest names, it's a feeling. It's how you made people feel rather than what your scores and all that. You brought a feeling around like what South Africa is about. Is that fair to say?
If that is the way it seems, the way you view it, then she's perfect. I'm happy with that.
Mm.
Again, I'm not a stats dude.
Yeah.
I played to win games of cricket. I wanted to win test matches. I want to win series. I want trophies.
Mm.
I still have that mentality today. Even with Essex, that's what I want. Mm. I want to win championship with them.
Mm.
So if that's the way that guys from the external view, me as a influence of the game, I'll be pretty happy with that. I've never played for honor and pride in this. When I started playing this thing, I didn't know what legacy was.
Mm.
Maybe still to this day, I don't really know what it means or what it's about. Shall be 5 years late. In 5 years to come, I'll be like, oh shit, this is what it's about.
Yeah.
But I'd still like to think I've got more in the tank. I still want to like go out and perform and do well for Essex. That's just how I am.
Just briefly about Essex, you obviously, you were brought in to effectively replace Alistair Cook. Again, another big name legend that you're coming in to replace.
It's following you, this thing.
Yeah, this it is
now that you mention
you.
This. Is
yeah, sorry
shit
about that.
Yeah.
But it does speak to the fact that, you know, you are that kind of stature, that kind of thing doesn't frighten you. You enjoy that kind of challenge coming in for a big name like that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's my first year in the UK, that's all they could speak about, these journalists. You know, you're coming in to replace Cookie, big shoes to fill. I'm like, listen, he's an absolute gun. He's about 100 times better than what I am.
Mm.
If you think I'm going to come in and do what he's doing, then good luck.
Because
it might be the total opposite. I said, I'm going to come in and do what I do.
Mm.
He's a legend of England cricket, world cricket as well. Essex legend. I mean, if I could do half of these things, I think I'll be pretty good.
You'll be okay.
The team will be in pretty good position as well. I said, if that's the way you guys are just going to view this, then we're not going to chat anymore. Because now I'm going to try and do it my way.
Mm.
He's a gun. I love him. I respect him. Someone I always looked up to when I played against and watching him on TV. But I mean, I'm not going to try and emulate what he's done.
No.
I mean, that would just be stupid.
Yeah. And obviously, at Essex, you've got Simon Harmer there. Are you mates with him? Or you've obviously known him for a number of years, growing up with him?
No, Harmer and I, we've come a long way. Known him, obviously, I think from his first season ever at the Warriors.
Oh.
This fat off spinner with proper red hair. He had like this bloody mullet going, and I was like, what is this character? He's changed the lot.
He's
changed for the good.
Yeah.
So Homi and I've come a long way. Homi kind of knew about my future.
Yeah.
Before anyone really. I think he was one of the first guys to find out that this is my plan. And I said to him, listen, I'm going to retire after the Indian series. What's Essex got? And obviously I've got a British passport. So
okay.
I play as an English local.
That helps.
It does help. So essentially they get three overseas players for the price of two.
Yeah.
So I said to him, this is the plans. Go chat to your coach. Then the coach was Anthony McGrath.
Okay.
And I don't think that conversation went too far before McGraw was like, he must come.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was pretty signed, sealed, and delivered the day after the Cape Town test.
Nice.
Yeah.
And I mean, you've got a different purpose now. Dean Elgar, the family man, married, you've got
No, twins. not married.
You're not married, okay.
It's my partner.
Your partner, you've got twins.
Yes.
Take us through that kind of Dean Elgar, the dad and partner.
Yeah, it's heavy, eh? it's also, again, it's a extremely humbling process, eh? Becoming a parent. I've got twins, boy and a girl.
Yeah.
Started in the quite rough. They were born 2 months early, so we spent 6 weeks in hospital with them, which was quite heavy. You look at them now, they're a year old. Would never have thought anything of them. They were born early or whatever. You'd never have thought that because they're thriving now. Man. Other than being short, their parents are quite short, so they're never going to be giants. They're never going to be giants. But yeah, it's Brookie, it's a crazy, crazy way that you can go from being this professional sportsman.
Mm-hmm.
All you're committed to is actually your livelihood of looking after your job to this has come our way and you just totally switch. So yeah, and I think I've always wanted to have kids later in life. I'm very much of focus on your career. You look after your career and then you're like, there's so many good things after that. I had exposure of teammates in the protests. You had kids with them with travel.
Yeah.
It's nannies and it's this. And I just thought, being a professional cricketer is hard work. It's like hectic. And now you got to entertain your family. And if they're having a bad day, your missus is pissed off. And then you got to go and face Mitchell Starc and to hit your head off. Just thinking, like, that's not the way I wanted to look after my cricketing career. And that's maybe the one selfish part of I've had in my game was that.
Yeah.
But I think every cricketer, every male cricketer has to have a kid because you actually realize what a little tosspot you've been because these little beings just totally change your way of thinking.
Yeah.
And it's like an extremely humbling process because they're this big and they've dominated your whole world and turned it around upside down and for the good, obviously.
Yeah.
And just makes you realize that cricket is actually just such a tiny percentage of your life.
But the lessons you learn in that game that you can pass on to your kids are
second to none. I think also being older, you panic less. And I think you take things a little bit longer in your stride now. Like if it's that bad, like it's still going to be bad for a longer period. So just let it pan out a little bit longer.
Yeah.
Where I don't know how I would have dealt with it being younger.
Yeah.
So being older, more mature, I'd like to think I'm a lot more chilled now. Not a hooligan like I used to be. still a little bit though.
A little bit of dog in you. Yeah.
And I think I can just manage things better. Obviously, career's coming to an end now, and my main focus is to look after them and get them through their life. Which is an exciting journey for both of us.
What's after playing for Dean Elgar? Is it coming back, living in South Africa? What's next?
I don't know yet. I might start a podcast, The Shortest Guy in Cricket.
Love it.
I don't know. I still want to maximize what I have left as from a playing point of view.
Yeah.
I think I've still got a lot of scope within the Essex Change Room with a lot of the young players that are coming through. Talented young cricketers. Jeez.
I actually wanted to ask you that briefly about the comparison between the youngsters coming through England and maybe some of the guys coming through South African cricket.
I can't really speak much for the domestic game in South Africa. I've totally isolated myself and distanced myself from the game because I'm not based here. I'm in the UK for half the year. Geez, the talent pool in the UK is a little bit scary, I think.
Really?
We've got, just in our change room, serious talent. Wow. And looking around, you play against the other counties and that, there's some seriously good players out there. I mean, they can do everything these days, these young punks. but yeah, the batters that are coming through in the UK are something special.
Is it?
Yeah.
That's good too.
Yeah, so we'll going forward, Brookie, I don't know. I don't know if the game will, if I want to continue being part of cricket. I don't think I have the love of cricket like I used to when I was younger. I still dig winning. I love scoring runs. I don't think that will ever come to an end. But I've just got different interests now. I'd like to, I want to be a hands-on father. I don't want to, I don't see any difference between playing the game and being a commentator because you're still on the road.
Yeah.
And you're still living a life in the hotel.
Yeah.
Because if you're doing that, that's
the same circuit. Yeah.
It's the same. It's the same thing, just without the pressures of playing
And the warm ups.
Yeah, I'll sign up for that. No warm ups. I mean, I don't know if I'll get into coaching. I haven't thought that far back. I still like to think I can influence batters just from a thinking point of view, and kind of getting that desire of how to bat for a long period of time. I still think that's an art that a lot of batters are still finding, trying a way to define themselves in. So yeah, I don't know, but
I think that there's the uncertainty is also beautiful. In this sense, because it does open you up to any opportunity that might come along the way, or you're just gonna go to Leopard Creek and play golf for 2 years.
I'm in for that. Yeah. I'm in for that.
You're already in with Johan Rupert, so I'm sure you've got something in one of his companies that could interest you.
Don't know if I really want to get into the corporate game, but let's see. Who knows? I might surprise myself.
We've got a section called The Declaration, which is kind of quick fire questions. Just say whatever comes out of your mouth, which is, we'll edit accordingly.
Good luck.
Okay. You're in the Proteas change room. Who's got the worst kind of change room habits?
Are you talking about current?
No, when past? You were playing in the past.
Morne Mokgoro.
An example? Like,
it's just messy, yeah.
Okay.
Just messy, and his shoes are this big, and takes up a lot of space. Just takes up a lot of space. Got bats everywhere. Bat at 11. Don't know why. So I'd say Morne.
Towards the bowler.
But then a proper team man.
Nice. Your favorite bowler to face that you just loved, you love facing?
Don't think you love facing any international bowler.
Yeah.
Because they're all pretty. They got something about them. They're either quick or extremely skillful.
Yeah.
I don't know who I love. I love playing against certain teams.
Which team did you?
Well, your Cobras, I love.
Why is it? Let me ask this question on record. What is it that drives other teams to always play well against Western Province Cobras?
I've got no idea. It must be the mountain. I don't know. Maybe we're jealous of not having the mountain, but I love playing against the Cobras.
Love it. Okay, that's fair enough. Which bowler in the nets made you question your life choices? So obviously, like teammate that
you... Andrews Nokia.
Is it?
Yeah. Because if he wasn't, like, he didn't have his proper rhythm, he could bowl 150 k's an hour without even trying. And he doesn't know why it's happening. Well, that's how I view it. And then he'll bowl you the most rip snorting bouncer, and he'll apologize for it.
Yeah, it'd be the nicest person.
I didn't mean it. I'm not sure, but of course you meant it. And he'd be like, Yammer Jom. It wasn't on purpose. Yeah. He was just like, bad, your teammates. And he's.
You've got a test match tomorrow.
Pinging things around my ears. Yeah, what are you doing?
Legend. If not a cricketer, what career path would you have followed?
I don't think there's ever been another career that I wanted to start with.
All or nothing.
I think it's always been cricket.
Nice. Best coach you've played under?
Mark.
But nice. And then final question. Your favorite teammate of all time? With domestic or even school days, or favorite teammate that you would literally go to war with?
Jeez. Remember, there's a lot going on here. I'm going to throw utter curveball and out of the ballpark here at the moment.
Yeah.
And it's a proper old school. Johan van der Walt.
Jan van der Walt, back in the Free State days. Nice.
Yeah, I mean, he was, we were also roommates.
Mm.
And just the way of how to play the game hard.
Mm.
And you don't take anything for granted.
Mm.
Like, you've been given this job,
mm.
your role, perfect your role.
Mm.
And for me, he was the ultimate performer
mm.
as well. Like, immensely skillful.
Above his weight as well.
Immensely
like.
Skillful bowler.
Yeah.
With a bat, he was so dangerous. But just like the way he like conducted himself on the field,
yeah.
and he had that look about him of like, this guy looks like he'll stab you on the field, you know, like, don't mess with him, like, he'll stab you. But then off the field,
yeah,
chill, down to earth, just wants to have a beer, have a braai,
yeah,
have a ciggy. But the way he played the game
mm.
was for me like the first introduction of, if you can do that for a long period of time, you'll be okay.
Nice. Dino, well, it's been an absolute, it's one of those interviews that we speak about as like, who's the kind of guest that we want to get on. Dean Elgar's name comes up all the time. And when I saw Essex were coming down to Cape Town, I was like, let me get on the ticker there and try and make it happen. It's been an absolute honor and privilege to have you on the show. We wish you everything of the best for the county season. You're never going to play the Cobras again, so you can carry on doing what you're doing. Thank you for everything you've done for South African cricket. I think your legacy will live long into the memories, past the change room and past any kind of scores. The fact that you spent almost 2 years on the field of play doesn't matter. It's what you made people feel. So thanks very much for that, and hopefully we'll see you we'll see you back home soon in between all your gigs, and everything of the best for your preseason.
Thank you.
And we'll see you soon.
Thanks a lot for having me, Brooklyn.
Thanks, mate. It's been amazing.
It was awesome. Thank you.